Good afternoon, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Carla Marinucci, political writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, and I'll be the moderator for today's program. Find the Commonwealth Club on the internet at commonwealthclub.org. Today we discuss the future of the Republican Party in California. In the wake of significant Democratic victories in congressional and presidential elections, Republicans are divided over the best way to move forward and regain political ground. And so this debate is playing out on a national and a regional stage. And in California, this months-long budget showdown has revealed a split among Republican officials. You're going to hear some of that today. Some of the questions we're going to be looking at: how will the Republican Party craft its image to harness a new base in the face of the changing political landscape? Can California's GOP achieve harmony? And that is question number one, I think, for the Republican Party. We're going to be talking about the budget, upcoming races, the governor's race, congressional races, and we're going to go a little bit to the national stage, too. I got to ask these guys about Sarah Palin, Governor Sanford, some of the issues on the national scene with regard to Republican leadership. To shed light on all this, I'm really happy to be with these panelists today. To my left, Abel Maldonado, a Republican California State Senator from the 15th District, which includes San Luis Obispo County, portions of Monterey County, Santa Barbara County, and Santa Clara County. You've read about him in the headlines. In recent years, Senator Maldonado has really built a reputation as somebody who crosses party lines, is willing to reach across. He's taken a lot of criticism for that. Earlier this year, he was initially among the Republican senators rejecting a series of bills designed to close the $41 billion state budget deficit. He later joined the Democrats. He supported some of those measures. He's been criticized from his party. So we want to hear from him on the future of the Republican Party in California and on the budget as it now stands. Next to him, Tom Del Beccaro, the vice chair of the California Republican Party. A very outspoken guy. He became active in Republican politics in 1980 by walking precincts for Ronald Reagan. He was the Bay Area chair for Bill Jones for U.S. Senate. He served as the Contra Costa chair for the Simon for Governor campaign. He's consulted on many campaigns. He's the founder of the Walnut Creek Law Firm, Del Beccaro, Hornsby & Blake. He also has a very well-read political website, politicalvanguard.com, and he's got a new book, The New Conservative Paradigm. He's been labeled a rising star in the Republican Party. He's a frequent commentator on radio and TV. And next to him, Joe Tooman, professor of political and legal communications in the Department of Communication Studies at San Francisco State, where he has taught and researched for 20 years. Professor Tooman is a well-known analyst, has published extensively in the field of political and legal communications. He's also a political analyst for CBS 5 Television News and CBS Radio. Boy, where do I start with these guys? We're gonna give them a chance to just comment on the general situation of the Republican Party in California. And here's just some basics as I see it. In California, Republicans hold just two statewide offices, governor, insurance, and commissioner. They have a bare minority in both legislative houses. The party's registration in California is, by most accounts, collapsing. It no longer holds a majority in a single congressional district in California. So, Senator Maldonado, let me start with you. Why exactly are Californians turning away from the Republican Party, apparently in droves, and what specifically would you do to turn this around?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me here, and thanks to the Commonwealth organization for allowing us to come and say a few words. It's great to be here. What is happening to my party? Well, it is no longer the party of Teddy Roosevelt and the party of Abraham Lincoln, the party that had ideas, the party that built the park system, the party that went out there and did so much for the American people. It has become the party of the extreme hard right. And it's unfortunate because the extreme hard right cannot win in the state of California. And so we have a situation, as Carla stated, we've lost the majority in every congressional district. We have two constitutional office holders, one of them, which is Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, who won in an open primary in California. It wasn't a closed primary system. And then we have, obviously, Steve Poizner, a billionaire who spent quite a bit of dough to beat Cruz Bustamante here in California. If it wasn't for those two things, we'd probably have a clean slate of Democrats in this state. This party can no longer be the party of no, because no to everything just doesn't work. Californians don't want people to say no. Californians want people who are willing to step up to the table. They want people that have some ideas, who are willing to lead, not have any fear of both the right or the left, and put California first. And I'll leave it with that. Just briefly, I represent the 15th District, which is Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo, Monterey, Santa Cruz, and Santa Clara. So how do I get elected in Santa Cruz for the life of me? I don't know. But we'll leave that for a later question.
Tom Del Bacara.
I too, want to say hello and say hi to Joe. We appear sometimes in the morning on CBS, and it's nice to have the senator here. I have a slightly different take. You know, parties do well when they are responsive to the issues of the day and they provide meaningful answers. So you could be the most brilliant conservative in the world and have a conservative solution to coastal development, but if you're running for senator in Kansas, you're irrelevant. So parties need to be able to provide solutions. And the Republican Party, frankly, was started because a particular party, the Whig Party, was no longer providing relevant solutions to slavery, and the Republican Party was born out of an effort to do that. Californians are generally turning away from parties. Decline to states are rising, and the Republicans are doing a little bit worse, no question about it. To turn that around, it is simply a question of turning back to issues that are responsive to voters. And there are many issues in California, frankly, where voters agree dramatically with Republicans. Take in the last cycle, Jessica's Law, overwhelmingly supported by Californians, which was a Republican initiative. So for the Republicans to turn this around, it is not a question in my mind of whether you're moderate, hard right, hard left, but whether you're providing responsive solutions. And there are issues related to voter ID, to the budget, law and order. There's more than enough issues for the Republicans to do well. They need to market those ideas. They need to let people know that they are their ideas, that they will reform government. If they do that in a manner that is not, as Abel would say, no, 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 because the party of no is the minority party, but are providing solutions to people, the party will recover. And that has always been true for parties throughout American history. There were times when the Democrats did well nationally, times when the Republicans did well nationally. Republicans got out of office in 2006 because they spent too much and loaded the country up on debt. Sound familiar? In 18 months, there'll be another turn nationally, or less than 18 months. So the recovery road is to do what Abel in part said, not be the party of no, provide real solutions to real problems affecting people. It can be done. It will be done.
Joe.
Okay. I think you can hear me now. I would echo some of what I've heard and add a couple of different points. And I'm not partisan in this, so I'll speak about the political system, not just about Republicans as well. I do agree that the party, the Republican Party, and the Democratic Party, for that matter, and for any relevant wants to be a player, a third party, has to be responsive and reflect the views and the wishes and answer the anxieties or speak to the anxieties of the voting populace. There's no question about that. But there are several things that are in play that conspire in this particular era against the Republican Party in particular. And one of those is the fact that we have a system that basically reinforces incumbency privilege. And if you have more Democrats in office than Republicans, that's going to reinforce the advantage that the party has. And it has worked that way in the past when Republicans were in control of the legislature, the governor's office in this state and in every other state in the union and in the Congress as well, and in the White House for that matter. incumbency advantage is considerable. And when you're in power, you have very little incentive to do anything like changing the election rules or enacting meaningful campaign finance reform or any of those things that would threaten your power and your privilege. So one of the things I think Governor Schwarzenegger, to his credit, has argued for before, which we really haven't enacted, is changing our system to make it more competitive. And whether you like Republicans in San Francisco, and there are a lot of people who don't, or not, I think any Democrat or variation of a Democrat thereof would probably have to agree that we have a healthier political system when you have lots of opposition, because that's what gives you a vigorous and robust debate and discussion about things, and it creates what we called a long time ago in constitutional law a robust marketplace of ideas. It gives people more choices. It doesn't do anybody any good to have one party basically that dominates the other party and no third parties to be seen, because basically then you have groupthink. It's just one view of things. And sometimes the people who are your opponents, they don't have to be your enemies, have good ideas that you can co-opt or buy into or meet in the middle. And there's nothing wrong with having loyal opposition. And we don't have that right now is one of the problems. So part of my answer to this question is incumbency advantage creates very little incentive to reform. The absence of reform creates a climate where you don't have meaningful discussion and debate unless you create a crisis atmosphere like the kind we're in today. And that's a problem. And I think, therefore, that the Republican Party's problems aren't just their problems, it's everybody's problem. You need to have a vigorous, robust debate. The other thing I would say, though, speaking to the question about Republican politics in California, per se, is that the state is very much a microcosm of what you see nationally. The Republican Party nationally is I think, accurately characterized by Senator Maldonado as being, I wouldn't say they're in the clutches of, but they're very much influenced by right-wing politics. And really since the time of Ronald Reagan, when Southern Democrats migrated into the Republican Party, and many of these people were evangelical Christians who brought their social values with them as well, that they sort of transformed the party in many ways away from fiscal conservatism and move more towards a lot of the social issues that people who have good conscience and they're good ethical people can disagree on. And they dominated the national platform. And so here I'm talking about abortion, right to life, you name it, all the rest of the issues that speak to those things where people of good conscience and good mind can differ. California has some of that as well. Our state is a very, very large state. You know, if you live here, how diverse a place it is. The San Joaquin Valley, where I grew up, is very, very different in its political orientation than San Luis Obispo. San Luis Obispo is clearly different from Santa Cruz, which is different from Santa Barbara, which is different from San Francisco, which is different from North Hollywood, and on we go. It's a very diverse place. And the party here does well in some places, in rural areas, for example, also in places where there are people who have high incomes or worried about taxes and the like. But it does less well in other places, frankly. And that diversity, I think, in the state speaks to the challenge that this party has in building a solid base to have a solid hold. The legislature is a different situation than the constitutional offices that they were mentioning, because to win in the legislature, you just have to win in that one little narrow plot of land where your district is. When you're winning statewide office, on the other hand, you have to convince 50% plus one of those voters in the statewide election that you should win, and that requires something different, obviously enough. I would say, with respect to that last point for the party, that I don't think it's necessarily issues that have conspired against Republicans. I think, as Senator, now President Obama, demonstrated in the last election cycle, what it takes is a strong, high-profile, charismatic leader to be the standard-bearer for the party in the state. Governor Schwarzenegger basically got in a recall election, if you recall, because we removed Gray Davis, and he was a very charismatic figure who didn't have to campaign very much. But if you remember, he entered the election at the end of the cycle and dominated all the coverage because of that, and he was that charismatic person. He hasn't proven as effective, I think, charismatically as a leader since then. But I guess I'd throw this question back to my two colleagues here. I don't know who that person is now that we're going forward, either in the Senate races or in the high-profile governor's race, who will be that person who is the face and the leader of the party.
I think that's exactly the point we want to get to. Where is that leader next time? But first of all, I want to go to the budget, the immediate issue, which is the budget crisis here in California. Senator Maldonado, you're up there. The Big Five is meeting as we speak. And this has become this tug of war, as we all know, between the Republicans and the Democrats over raising taxes and cutting social programs. And the Republicans have held firm, yourself included, on this. But I guess the question is, when it comes to taxes, Republicans holding the line, considering in the last special election, really 12% of the voters decided that issue on Prop 1A, you know, and some of the polls have suggested, yes, Californians do prefer spending cuts to taxes. Is this a winning strategy for the Republicans to hold the line on taxes? You yourself have crossed it sometimes, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen this time. Give us your thoughts on.
Well, first of all, the leader of the Republican Party in California is Arnold Schwarzenegger. He is the governor of the state of California. He is our leader. And currently in the budget situation that we're in, we have a problem. Here's the problem. There is madness in that Capitol. There is dysfunction. People sleeping under their desks at 2, 3 in the morning. Why? Because we have partisanship in Sacramento. We have the Republicans, the hard-right Republicans, who will say no to everything and will never vote because they're afraid of a right-wing blog or some radio host in their area that might take them out of office. And we have the same thing on the left. We have some very, very influential unions, and we have some very influential groups like the Trial Bar who goes out there and pushes hard. And it's caused this crisis. I think the question is on the budget, how are we going to get out of this mess? I can tell you this. In February, I was dragged down. I was beat up. I was sweated. I was holding on by my nails to not increase revenues in California. I did not want to raise taxes. I've been in office now for 14-something years, 15 years. And in February, I raised revenues on the people of California. Let me tell you why. Because there was no other solution. Now, my friend here on the left might say, well, there is other solutions. Cut the fat, cut government. We had a $42 billion deficit. So we raised, this is what we did. We raised taxes by 13, we cut 13, and we borrowed 10. Got us to 36, and we put the balance on the initiative process, which is Proposition 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D, E, and F. And obviously those went down. It gave us a $6 billion deficit, and the economy continues to go down, which now we're at 24, 25, or 26. How are we going to solve it? I think that's the question that Carl is asking here. Well, I can tell you this. I really believe that the people in the May 19th election said this to me. At least I'm going to speak for myself. They said, Abel, do your job. Don't send it to us. You're asking me to borrow here, to shift here, to move this, to move that. It's too confusing. I don't know. I've got my family. I'm trying to make it. And you're asking me to solve this budget problem. You do it. So here we are. We have a $25 billion deficit. Let me tell you how we're going to solve it. We need $14 billion in cuts. We need some reforms that the governor's asking. And let me share a little secret that's out there. There's going to be another $7, $8 billion in shifts of funds, which you also know them as gimmicks. There's no other choice. It's going to happen. The question is, who's going to stand up and do it? And here's what my challenge is here. I voted to increase taxes. Now it's the time for the other party to say, we need to cut a little bit more without decimating the safety net. And that's where we're at.
First of all, I'm thrilled that, or it's amazing to be here to Abel say that I'm on his left. you know, here's the issue. There's two things here. There is spending and there is raising revenue. And I've pretty much made it my life's work, the purpose of this book, to debunk the theory that you raise tax rates to raise revenues. That is false. It did not work in 1916. It did not work in 1932. It did not work under Truman. It did not work under Eisenhower. It did not work under Pete Wilson. It is historical fact, not politics, that when you raise tax rates over time, you wind up with less money, not more. This is not my idea. John Maynard Keynes, liberal lion, said that high tax rates defeat their own purpose. JFK said that we need to cut tax rates to reinvigorate the economy and raise revenues. Ronald Reagan said the same thing. I'm thinking that if John Maynard Keynes, JFK, and Ronald Reagan can be on the same place and the same issue, it is not politics, it is economics. Here is the reality. California is the 48th worst business environment. It is sixth in the nation in highest taxes. We are chasing jobs away. The road to recovery includes some of the reforms that Abel has been talking about, but we have to make California job-friendly again. We now have a revenue problem. 3 years ago, we were up in the 120 in revenues. Now we're in the mid-80s because we have killed off the economy nationally and locally. So part of the answer is not, do we raise tax rates? That's never the answer. If you want to raise revenues, you have to create an environment where business and communities can succeed by creating a low-tax environment that raises more revenues than a high-tax environment. So I am not against increased government revenues. I just think we have to once and for all come to an understanding that the best way to raise revenues over time is to create a job-friendly environment. I am all for that. Abel, you participated in that when you helped reform workers' comp. Let's keep doing that. That'll solve the budget crisis over time.
But, Tom, let me ask you this, because you're talking about, you know, we need to talk about this and we need to come to an agreement. When Senator Maldonado took his position in February, he was excoriated by his own party. In fact, as you know, the John and Kidd websites are out there, had his head on a stick. There's websites, never elect Abel Maldonado or anything. How does that help the Republican Party in California? Because you were critical of him yourself.
Actually, I was critical a long time ago of Abel on the minimum wage. I am critical of Republicans that do not articulate the historical fact that lower rates result in higher revenue and higher rates result in lower revenue. This is just a disagreement I have. And if we cannot reach Americans to get this understanding, it is no small irony that Eastern European countries are growing faster than we are with lower flat taxes. So
but
the reality is, does it help that Republicans are fighting each other? No, just as it's not helping Karen Bass right now to have the unions fighting with her. But I'm not in politics simply so that the Republican Party can succeed. I am more concerned with long-term public policy, and it is absolutely false notion that you raise tax rates to get more money. It is false. We need to come to that historical understanding, and then we can debate the other issues.
Well, I think Tom mentioned there's two things. There is raising revenues or there is cutting spending. He said there's two things. Well, he's wrong. There's another one. It's called deficit spending. And in essence, the Republican Party over the last 10 years have said okay to deficit spending. As long as the budget has no new taxes, you go ahead and deficit spend. And I think that we're all in this fight together of where this state got. We had $13 billion in taxes that I raised. And Carla's right. The very next day, they passed a resolution at the Republican Party not to fund me for 2 years. Now, you know what? I haven't seen one Republican come up and say, we're going to repeal Abel's tax increase. I haven't had the party come out and say, you know what, let's repeal the tax increase because that was horrible. Let me tell you why they haven't done it, because you can't do it. I was faced with a situation where do I cut or do I raise some revenues? And, you know, this notion of just cutting, well, let me just share something with you. We can shut down the courts. That's $2 billion. We can shut down UC, CSU, and community colleges. That's $12 billion. Let me see. That's $15 billion. Okay. Let's keep going. Let's just shut down the prisons. That's $10 billion. Okay. That gets us to $25 billion. Let's just shut down more parts of maybe, you know what? Why don't we just
– the DMV.
Well, that's part of government. I mean, at the end of the day, the point I'm trying to make is – I raised revenues because there was no other choice to keep California from going into bankruptcy, to keep California solvent and putting California forward. Let me share one little thing, a little tidbit that you might not know. There was a governor in California that did it twice, and his name was Ronald Reagan. And he got elected in 1966. In 1967, he had the largest tax increase in the history of California. And in 1972, we had a $3 billion budget, and he raised taxes almost $850 million. It was called tax withholding. He governed. He wanted to govern. And I know that Tom will hold Ronald Reagan up here, and so do I. But Ronald Reagan signed the Abortion Therapeutic Act in California. Ronald Reagan raised taxes in California twice, three times in America as president. And Ronald Reagan signed amnesty. who gave millions of Hispanics the opportunity to be here. That's the Ronald Reagan that I know. That's the Ronald Reagan I support. So you have to govern. And if we govern, Republicans will continue to win. And if we're the party of no, we're going to be in shambles in the state.
Joe, your thoughts on...
Well, I think that part of the tension you hear represented in this dialectic is the frustration of someone who's elected and serving and is accountable and lives in a fishbowl in terms of that lack of privacy and everything is scrutinized, and that's Abel. That is the price, by the way, of being an elected official. And the intellectual luxury that Tom enjoys from being part of the process but not being part of that in the sense that he's held accountable. I mean, maybe people won't buy his book if they don't like him, but you know, he's not threatened in the same way. And this is an interesting debate that you have between the two of them. I think the larger issue, though, that we're not getting at, whether it's a question of raising taxes or not, is that the way that we raise money in the system that we have in California is very much one that's one of convenience. When times are good and the economy is robust, the state coffers are full, and we don't have these issues. We just sort of worry about how much we're going to spend on one thing or another, but we're not talking about eliminating or cutting or furloughing workers or calling something one thing when you're really taking back. That's sort of what a furlough is. It's not a day off. It's we're going to reduce your salary. We're not playing those games. And, of course, when times are bad, naturally, the system will take in less, and we're forced to confront the reality that we cannot spend money that we don't have, the same way that families confront that in this recession. So in a sense, Abel and the people in the legislature, like the rest of us, are victims of a recession that will affect everybody. And when you're the largest state in the union and one of the biggest economies in the world, our state is one of the larger ones, if there's an economic recession, if everybody's portfolio is down 40%, ours is too. And that means we have less to spend. Now, that speaks to me to bigger issues than just, are you going to raise taxes or cut spending? You really have to think about the way that you structure the system and what kind of discipline you'll be taking when times are flush to have reserves and the like, and what are your budget priorities and the rest of it. And these are bigger questions, honestly. Though the other point that I want to make about this, which I think is reflected in some of the frustration you hear in this exchange, is that the system itself, and Abel mentioned this when he talked about the ballot initiative process, still creates right now, this is in need of reform as well, a situation in which people in the legislature, when they're sometimes confronted in the past, have been confronted with some of these things, do exactly what we did in the most recent special election. They just slough this off on the voters. And I think the voters have been very clear in the last couple of election cycles that they don't really want this responsibility. It's exactly what Abel said. They want the people in the legislature to do their jobs and not be saddled with these responsibilities. And this is part, I think, of our dysfunctionality. The ballot initiative process, by the way, was something put into place many, many decades ago, and it had to do with the undue influence of the original robber barons in California, including the Charlie Crockers and Leland Stanfords of this world and the rest, who had too much influence in the legislature. And the idea was to create more democracy, more input for average voters like the rest of us. That's what the initiative process was for. But what it's become in 2009 is a way for the legislature to avoid difficult issues or defer the responsibility for doing exactly what Abel said, make a tough decision and take the heat for it. And they put that off on voters. And so voters are mad. And the fact that voters did nothing in this last election cycle has put more pressure on the legislature now because they're not really sure which way the wind is blowing on this.
You know, Carla, we've got to be clear about this. By the way, Ronald Reagan said those tax increases were the worst mistake of his political career. Abel said that he raised revenue. Actually, what happens is somebody writes something down, the legislature votes on it, a governor signs it. That's politics. Then the laws of economics, which have never been repealed or changed, take over. And when you raise tax rates in a down environment, you wind up with less money than if you had done nothing at all. That is historical fact. The legislature did not raise taxes. They raised tax rates, which is why their projections for what they thought they were going to get have been consistently wrong. If you want to raise revenues over time, then you must create an environment in which the business community, employees, and the environment can work together. The answer to the rebound for California's budget lies in economics, not politics. We have to create the condition to which people come back. We're losing 100,000 a year of people leaving this state. We have to bring them back. We have to give them incentive to come back.
But, Tom, that's not
so
all
that
because
raise...
of taxes, though.
That's no, it's fair. The 48th worst business environment in the country.
Some of
overall.
That has to do with the recession. That's not the fault of taxes. That's not accurate.
Well, gentlemen, hang on one second. I'm going to do
it. 100% government caused.
And
100%.
I think, Carly, if Ronald Reagan said there was this mistake, I would probably agree with him because his taxes were permanent. The ones that I voted for were temporary. For 2 years, they go away.
Let me do one thing, a business here, which is a reminder to our radio audience. You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program. Today we're talking about the future of the California Republican Party and how that will impact the rest of the country. Our panelists, Abel Maldonado, California State Senator, Tom Del Beccaro, Vice Chair of the California Republican Party, and Joe Tooman, Professor of Political and Legal Communications at San Francisco State. Let me get to, when we talk about, we're getting a lot of questions today, I want to get to the open primary and reforms, Senator, that you've proposed. A lot of the questions are about who is the makeup of the Republican Party and who's missing from the Republican Party. One question, Republican Party has alienated Latinos and African Americans, women, let me get into that. I don't have to tell you about the last election and how President Bush was very successful in attracting Latino voters. That collapsed with Obama, who got 67% of Latino voters. And women, never one woman party chair in California, one senator, one congresswoman. That is the situation for Republican women in California. Why should they be attracted to the Republican Party, Senator?
Well, I really believe that Republicans let me backtrack. I really believe that Hispanics really do espouse the values of the Republican Party. The problem we have is
then
that
why are you so alone up there?
Because there's not many people that look like me that could get that message out to the Hispanic community. I'm sorry. I can talk to the Hispanic community, and they will listen to me, I believe. And I think if Tom Del Beccaro goes and speaks to them, they might listen to him, but I'd venture to say that they probably wouldn't. So I think we need more people who look like me in the Republican Party that can get that message out of hope, opportunity, and so forth. That's why I'm a Republican, to be very sincere with you. Teddy Roosevelt and Abraham Lincoln, that's why I'm a Republican. But we have this system where we have a party, and we'll get into the open primary briefly, yeah. Carla, but we have a system where you have a fringe group on the Republican side who are very, very conservative, who want to hijack and manipulate members. I mean, here, I voted to keep California from going bankrupt. And a day later, there was a censure on me. We're not going to fund him anymore for 2 years because he voted to keep California from going bankrupt. The only Hispanic, I'm not saying Hispanic, but I mean, come on. So that needs to change. This is the way I look at it. And I think this is the way President Bush looked at it. Mexico is our neighbor. There's 13 million Hispanics in California. I'd venture to say that 95% of them are from Mexico. There's 45 million Hispanics in America. There's more Hispanics in L.A. than there are people in probably Canada. I can go on and on. There's more Hispanics in America than probably the population of 36 to 37 states in America. And Mexico's our neighbor. I know how I treat my neighbor. When I move into you bring cookies and you pick up the newspaper when they're gone, and that's how you treat your neighbor. But the Republican Party, I feel, has lost its way with my community. We talk a little bit about temporary worker permit? Oh, it's amnesty. Horrible amnesty. We make little things and we push people away. That needs to stop. And I hope it's soon. If not, we're never going to come back from where we're at.
Tom, what about it?
Well, Abel, I'm certainly happy to get some cookies from you. Abel knows that if you do a generic poll among the Latino community on the issues, certain issues that are generally inclined to be thought Republican versus Democrat, and you don't put Republican-Democrat on the top of it, the Latino community responds to the Republican position. But then when you put the name on the top, Democrat-Republican, it reverses. There is zero question. You cannot question that we need more diverse representation in the Republican Party. We need more Latinos involved. We need more women involved. We need them as messengers. We close those gaps when we close the messenger gap. I agree with Abel 100% on that particular issue. And it's not even really worthy of debate. We need to be a more diverse party. But Abel, I did not vote to censor you or do anything like that. I just disagree with you on economics, and I hope we can start to concentrate on that.
But what exactly is the party doing to change the situation? When you talk about the last GOP state constitutional officer who was a woman was Ivy Baker Priest in 1966, what is the Republican Party doing to change that?
It's the Republican Party does not have the same system as the Democrat Party, where the unions have enormous influence. I'm the number two Republican in the state, allegedly, in the party, right? I don't influence whether Meg Whitman runs or Steve Poizner runs or Carly Fiorina runs for U.S. Senate. They make those decisions, and unfortunately it takes an enormous amount of money to run in California, which makes it harder for everyone. I don't get to decide whether Meg runs or not. I didn't walk up to her and say that you have the wrong hair color, so you can't run. But what the party does need to do, no question about it, is do what some of the things that Abel talks about. We have to go into the communities. We need different messengers. We need to talk to them about the issues that are important to them. We need to spend the money, time, and dedication to do that long term. But as far as a constitutional office statewide, you know, somebody with a large checkbook, and this has been, frankly, the problem with democracies ever since Plato talked about it, they get to do things that others don't. But there's a lot of things we can do, and Abel is right on a lot of levels. We need more messengers that look, I want to say less like me, but...
Can I just tell you what my party does for the Hispanic vote?
And then we'll go to Joe. Yeah.
2 seconds. We try to put up a mariachi, we serve salsa and chips, and we put a sticker that says Viva the candidate's last name in the last week.
Let me take
to have Hispanics vote for the Republican Party.
Abel, let me take a different take at this. I think that Latinos and Hispanics in California, nationally, we don't have to limit this to California, but there's a large population here, sometimes feel a little bit like gay people in the log cabin interest group in the Republican Party, which is we're happy to take the party's happy to take their money, delighted to get their votes, but on key issues, not going to help you. Let's just call it what it is in California. Immigration is the issue. And people who come from Mexico or from Central America or South America get scapegoated in ways that Canadians who sneak into the United States never do. And the weird thing is, not the weird, but I think the ironic thing is, many of these people come from family units and family structures that espouse the family values of the Republican Party. They go to church. Their social values come, most of them, from the Catholic Church. They're simpatico on many of the social issues that would be so appealing to them. But they feel, time in and time out, that whenever it's time to rally the rest of the base and talk about immigration and do this insidious thing we do in politics, Democrats and Republicans creating the other. There's an us and there's a them, right? That they get blamed. They get blamed. And mark my words, by the way. We're going to hear about this in the next couple of weeks. We'll be talking again in this budget crisis about how many benefits are paid for undocumented aliens in this state, or country, rather. And that might be billions of dollars, but it's billions of dollars out of a deficit that's going to be in the trillions. It's you cannot lay the blame for all these problems at the feet of these people. So when you ask the question, why aren't they drawn to the party, that's the reason. I mean, it's very simple. When you take those kinds of positions, extremist positions, you have candidates in the National Party or even some nutcases here in California saying, let's build a wall between us and Mexico, whether it's a literal wall or a metaphorical wall. You're not just keeping people in Mexico out of the United States. You're keeping people who are Hispanic and Latino out of the Republican Party. And you do that with basically every group that's marginalized in the state. You want to change that? Change the position on those politics. Believe me, with the other issues that are there, they will come running in to the party, but not the way it is right now.
Senator Maldonado, you've proposed some reforms, particularly the open primary. I want to talk about this and how you think this will reshape the Republican Party in California. We have several folks who want to know, particularly how will the party function under this, especially in the Bay Area where you've got overwhelmingly Democratic, isn't that going to be damaging to the party? You know there's opposition within the party. Explain to people how you think is that. And Tom, I'd like to hear your thoughts as well on the open primary.
Well, first of all, I think the open primary, I think there's three areas where we need to reform to move California in the right direction. Number one is reapportionment. People passed that with Proposition 11. Done. Next, June of next year, we have an open primary on the ballot. That's step number two. Step number three, I never thought I'd say this, but I think we need to extend term limits a little bit so people know what they're doing in Sacramento instead of having a turnaround where we're trying to figure out where the restrooms are, and by that time we have to raise money to run for office. But the open primary, just briefly, it's going to change California forever. And it is a sweet little thing that Tom Del Boccaro hates, and I'll tell you why. Because he's going to lose control. Because he can no longer go out and say, you know what, let's get behind this candidate that can win 13% of the vote in the smallest voter turnout of all elections, which happens to be the primary. So right now we're choosing people to represent us in a primary election when it's the smallest voter turnout. Let me go one step further. My party last year said, you know what? We don't want Republicans. Excuse me. My party said, I don't want independents and declined states to vote in a presidential primary. In essence, this is what my party said. 25% of the market share, I don't want you. Right now, I don't need you. But come November, I want you to come with me. So you know what? Why not have an open primary system where people can go out there and choose for whomever they want? We're all on the same ballot. Just like if you like the way you elect your city council member, you're going to love the open primary because everybody's on the same ballot and the top two vote getters get to go off. I can tell you this. Here in San Francisco, after the primary, Republicans, you pretty much don't matter because a Democrat's going to win. And in Orange County, Democrats, you probably don't matter because a Republican's going to win. So I'm saying, what's the problem? Let the top two vote getters in the primary go to November. So listen to this. Listen to this bad idea. The two best candidates win in the primary, and guess what you get to choose in November? One of the best two candidates that were on the ballot. What is wrong with that? But there's two people that hate it. There's another person that hates it besides Tom. That's the Democrat Party operatives. It's party operatives, not Republicans and not Democrats. It's the operatives that want to control and manipulate these candidates. That's why they're so afraid of this thing. So, Tom, tell us why you hate it.
Go ahead, Tom.
Because historically it has never worked and there's no data that ever showed that. It's pretty simple. It actually will have the reverse effect. A typical government program, see a problem, institutionalize it, make it worse. Here's the reality. It will balkanize California. So in San Francisco, and the professor's next to me, so I want to hear what he has to say about this. In San Francisco, you will only get two Democrats. You will not have a discussion of different ideas. You will have a very narrow discussion. In Placerville, you will have two Republicans. Very narrow discussion. In Orange County, two Republicans. Very narrow. You will actually create more extreme candidates in places like San Francisco and Orange County. You will not create candidates more to the center. That's actually the historical record across the United States, Abel.
You're on not the issue, being consistent with the facts, Tom.
On the issue of open primary. Look, and by the way, the reason why Republicans don't prefer overwhelmingly to allow Democrats to vote in their presidential primaries, because it turns out that election results in the election of the people that will decide the rules at the Republican National Committee. So Republicans prefer to have their own party decide their own party rules. It's not – that is just a preference. I don't think it's wholly irrational to choose your own rules through your own process. Look, the open primary is not going to solve the problem of California. Leadership will. Understanding will. This is just going to institutionalize a problem and not result in greater debate. It's going to result in balkanization because of the nature of California.
If I put my Republican hat on, we have 31% Republican registration in California. We hold two constitutional officers. The Democrats control both the Senate and the Assembly, and our numbers are going down. It can only get better. It can only get better.
Yeah, not all change is good, it turns out.
Joe Tooman, your
thoughts? Well, I guess I'm sitting on the end, but I'm really in between these two fellows on this issue. I think where presidential primaries are concerned, the other issue in the modern era is dirty tricks and special ops within campaigns. And what happens in those kinds of open primaries is you get crossover voting, and what you do if you're in a district or whatever in a state, is you vote for the weaker Democrat if you're the Republican that you want to see nominated. So you're voting for the wrong person. So remember Rush Limbaugh telling people to cross over and vote for Hillary instead of Barack, and then for Barack instead of Hillary, that sort of business. That stuff happens there, and that's monkey business. You could reform it by just changing the rules.
And that's usually... That's usually hard right people or hard left people who are trying to manipulate the electoral
exactly.
laws. But good Californians, they'll vote for the right candidate.
Well, now let me come back, though, to the state, though, where the state is concerned. Abel, I think that anything that increases choices for people is good and it's more democratic, and why would anybody be against that? I don't have a dispute with you theoretically on that at all. The problem that we have in California, though, if we're talking about constitutional offices, is that it still costs an inordinate amount of money to run for office. I mean, look on the Republican side, who are the mainline candidates? These people don't have bank accounts that are like this. They have big bank accounts, and they've got friends who will write big checks. The reality is, if you're going to run for statewide office, and I mean the meaningful statewide offices, not the ones that people hang out in because they're waiting to run for governor in 8 years and they want to just hang in the public eye for a while, but the meaningful ones, you have to have a lot of money. And I don't think – well, I think that an open primary is an interesting idea. I don't think unless we sort of fix our system of how people raise money to run for office, that it's going to change things. That's got to be part of the discussion too, I guess is what I would say.
I want to look ahead a little bit to the coming elections, particularly the governor's race, and how you think Republicans are going to fare in that race, where we have on the Democratic side, of course, the only declared candidate is our mayor, San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom. Jerry Brown is expected, the Attorney General is expected to run. And, of course, on the Republican side, three Republicans, Meg Whitman, former CEO of eBay, Tom Campbell, the former congressman, and Insurance Commissioner Steve Poizner. In your view, gentlemen, who do you think is the best Republican to go up against the Democrat, and what's the potential for Republicans to maintain that office?
Well, let me see, Carla. We have the Republican Party candidates right now are going way to the right because they need to win a closed primary system, so they're moving out here. I'll never raise taxes. Way to the right, 13% of the vote. Okay, in a state that has 31% Republican registration. How do you come back to that middle? And this closed system is, I believe, going to hurt him. And I really believe that with a closed primary system, we don't know the real Meg Whitman. We don't know the real Steve Poizner. I do know this, that right now they're trying to outright wing each other because they want to win that primary. And the same thing on the left. Jerry Brown and Gavin Newsom are going to out-left each other to win the left primary. And then they're going to try to come to the center. And who's going to win? I don't know who's going to win. I just know that I'm disappointed that my party has become the party that you have to be a mega movie star or a billionaire to run for office, the highest office in the state. And that bothers me, because how does a billionaire connect to the person that just sold me a cup of coffee down the street who's on minimum wage, who barely making a living? How are they going to connect there? I mean, that's a question, but it's going to be a challenge. I don't know.
You know, as long as government has been around, there has been factions. It is human nature to be a giant fan and not like the Dodgers. Trying to reform human nature with an open primary and hoping it was work is – there's no evidence historically from the time of Athens to today that that really has made a difference or changed things for the better. Now, you ask about Meg Whitman – going to the far right. I don't know anyone who can rationally say that Meg Whitman is far right. She believes in publicly funded abortions. That's not far right. And the fact that she agrees with John Maynard Keynes, the most famous liberal economist in history, that high tax rates defeat their own purpose, does not make her far left. It makes her an economist versus a politician. So they're not trying to out – since both Poizner and Whitman, who have the most money, are pro-choice, I can't really claim that I have a far right winger out ahead. And the reality is that who's going to win this election? I don't know. Give me the memo on the last $100 million primary. I'll study it, and then I'll try and extrapolate to this one. But both of them, including Tom Campbell, all three of them, better come up with a rational solution to California's existing problems, which is not rampant abortion, but it is rampant government out of control, wasting money, like you pointed out, when the controller was buying millions of dollars worth of new furniture at the same time that we weren't funding essential conditions. It's not going to be a question. The next person who gets elected isn't going to be right wing or left wing. They better have an answer to California's problems.
But Tom, on that front, if I could say, I think Tom Campbell is the only candidate in the race so far, at least that I know of, who has the actual 30-page proposal on how to deal with the budget crisis. I haven't seen Republicans go running to his.
I actually wrote a book. I don't get to run, unfortunately. Tom
can't.
Thank you.
You can.
Tom,
you can.
It's too late.
Abel, you got a race coming up, buddy.
Abel, are you going to endorse me?
You better. If you're the only one, I'm going to endorse you.
News may be breaking out here as we speak.
But you know what? The both candidates, when they start talking about immigration, tell me where they're at. I guarantee you they'll be way to the right on immigration. I bet you on taxes, way to the right.
But to answer your question, Tom Campbell is a very thoughtful man. He's had a long, distinguished career. He just thinks that you can raise tax rates to raise revenue. And since history has never backed him up, I talked to him. I've tried to get him to understand that we've got to come. It doesn't even matter if you're Democrat or Republican. Are we going to help create stable funding for government or not? That's a different issue from liberal or Democrat.
Tom Campbell is the only candidate running for governor who's put out a plan on fixing California. And my phone during the February California going bankrupt, my phone was there and nobody called me from gubernatorial candidates on how to solve the problem. And my phone is still there, 651-4015. Call me. Tell me how you're going to solve this problem. I'm waiting. But you're not running for governor.
Joe?
You're supposed to say yet.
Yet. Neither are you, Abel. But maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. I'll answer your question directly if I'm going to handicap this. I know Tom Campbell done several appearances with him. I think he's extremely intelligent. He's very thoughtful. He thinks before he opens his mouth. I think he's probably the most likely to be bipartisan of the bunch. I don't know Meg Whitman personally. I'm impressed with her business background and her openness on some issues. If I'm going to be blunt, though, and assess someone's ability to win a general election, I find her lackluster as a speaker, and she would need some coaching where that was concerned. I don't find her. If you're looking for a change candidate, and having a woman headline the Republican Party in the governor's election would be wonderful. I don't find a lot of punch there. I think she'd do well in the print interviews. I think right now she comes across a little lackluster in television just for me. And finally, Steve Poizner, I would say, is probably the most recognizable name only in the sense that he's in elected office right now. But outside of this question about what we're doing with IOUs and the rest of it, I don't know that people really know what he does. I will tell you as an analyst that his internet campaign has been active. Because of my work with CBS, I get wire copy and internet stuff from everybody every day. I must have 59 messages from his campaign every day, hoping that we'll mention something in print. And he's been ahead of the game on that. So that suggests to me that he at least understands how to work the campaign. I don't know, though, that he's the charismatic leader that will take the party into the next millennium. And it really depends on if the Democrats decide on Gavin or Jerry.
We only have
can he get drama or passion lessons from Abel? Yeah. Meg?
Or you?
Drama, huh?
We only have a few minutes left. I really want to get their thoughts on the national scene, what's going on, because there's been so much news there. We know that Republican governors used to be the leadership to which the party would look for some kind of profile as to where they're going. And I don't need to count down for you some of the issues we've seen. But I got to go to Governor Mark Sanford of South Carolina and Sarah Palin.
Ouch.
Tell me how the Republican Party does not vote to censure Mark Sanford. I don't get that one, but maybe you all can explain that one to me.
How does the party not censure Mark Sanford, but they censure Abel Maldonado for voting for revenue increases?
Very good question, I would say. And Mr. Delbert, well, Carl, you want to handle that, and then I want to go to Sarah Palin.
What's your question? Should the Republican Party be censuring Mark Sanford?
No, you know what? I know Mark. It's very sad. I wish none of that would have occurred, but censuring someone for such a failure doesn't respond to voters and what they need. I'm very sad about the situation.
How about me, Tom?
It's a different issue. She's asking for a national censure. The question related to you was, does the party believe in Keynes, JFK, or Reagan or not, and history or not? And we disagree with you on economics, Abel. It's not a personal issue. And we need to get to this agreement for everyone, not for Republicans, not for Democrats. We need to fund essential services, not kill them off with the 48th worst business environment, which taxes play high tax. We have the second highest tax burden in American
history. I guess I just want to get back to the general question. Doesn't Ensign...
Of course,
they don't help the Democratic side.
But what is the party going to do?
Let me speak to this for a second, okay? First of all, who cares about censure? That might have to do a little bit with the fundraising, but the price that these people will pay that they're not paying in their private lives with their families. Right. Are the price that they'll pay with voters. And so that there's kind of something the marketplace figures out itself on this. The problem that some of these individuals have had is that they have been in a party that, as Abel described at the beginning of our discussion, has been in under the influence of people who, as I described, have very strong positions, convictions, on certain social issues. And when we got to this wonderful, who knows what it really means, term, family values, they espouse themselves as the party of family values. They did not behave, some of these people, consistent with that. The price that they pay is not a price for cheating on your spouse. That's an issue that most voters in this country have said it's between you and your spouse, and as long as it's not messing up your public life, we don't approve of it, but that's not how we're going to vote for you. That's not going to be the only thing we look at. That's why people gave Bill Clinton a pass last time around. The issue for these particular people is hypocrisy. You say one thing, you do another. And whether you're Democrat or Republican or Green Party member or a member of the Communist Party, if you're a hypocrite, that's going to cost you with voters ultimately. Sarah Palin, on the other hand, is a different kettle of fish. I don't really completely understand the decision she made because the last time I checked, lame duck is the last 3 months, not the last 2 years of office or whatever it is. But maybe she has a different vision of that in Alaska. I think that she still intends to be a player in the party. But I think that by resigning, as opposed to just saying I won't seek re-election, she's probably hurt her electability unless she takes, as I suspect, the chair on the Fox show, you know, next to Sean Hannity for the next 4 years and does the Ronald Reagan thing of having a radio show and signs a seven-figure book deal and then does public speaking gigs like Bill Clinton so she can be in the public eye for several years. I mean, maybe she got a shot then. But it's hard to see how she could be the standard bearer for the party with 2 years of experience as governor if that's all she has.
Senator Maldonado, what's your thoughts on when we're looking forward at the leadership of the party and who speaks for the party? First of all, your thoughts on with Sarah Palin, her resignation.
Well, I was confused, and I don't believe that you can be a leader and step down from a leadership position. So I don't know what the motive was. I like her. I thought she energized, I mean, at least for a couple of weeks, the Republican Party, we had a pulse. And I said, yes. And then all of a sudden, that's kind of gone away, and we want her back. But obviously, there's things that I disagree with her on, but I have no idea. I don't think it benefits her to not be the governor of Alaska and yet say, I want to lead the country down the road, I think is a challenge. But I think that's kind of where it's at.
And Tom, what are your thoughts on Sarah?
I worked in Alaska 4 different times. It's a way far away, and no one pays attention to it. So do I know exactly what she's doing? No. Is she unconventional? Yes. I don't generally go against people for being unconventional. I think she'll play a dramatic role in grassroots building. I don't think this is a prelude to the presidency unless Joe is correct that she's able to capitalize on it. I think she will be a foil. I think she'll be a loud voice. We need more loud voices instead of some of the other things that are going on, like you mentioned, like a Mark Sanford. And it's a sad thing. That doesn't make it wrong that he's being hounded the way he is because he did breach public confidence. But I think Sarah Palin will be around for a long time. She has a lot to say. We need better discussion, more balanced discussion, and I think she will add to it.
And when we talk about the presidential race, I think several people in the audience want to know your thoughts on who out there do you think can appeal to Republicans and energize people in California. We should note that one of the leading, I think, potentials is now a full-time resident of California, and that's Mitt Romney, who's moved to
He's not full-time. He has a house. There's a big tax issue there.
Tell us more on that one.
Well, you stay here 181 days, 10% of your income, 10 and a quarter gets taxed. He's not gonna fall for that. Here's the thing. Right now, 60% of Americans think government is too large. By a 14-point margin, the nation thinks that the Republicans will be better on the economy than the Democrats. I mean, among independents. The successful Republican will run by saying we can do a better job cleaning up government and providing greater services with limited government at the same time that we can create a better environment for people to have jobs. Note what I did not say in there. I don't know where Abel gets that all this right-wing talk.
Well,
I wrote an entire book about the fact that the last 8 presidential elections, the number one issue has been the prosperity issue. If a Republican makes a convincing argument on the prosperity issue and defending America, at the same time it respects American traditions, he can win this next election cycle and the Congress can be taken back. It is not a question of a way. It is a question of will and leadership to run on real issues that really matter.
We've only got a couple of minutes left, so I just want to get to one last thing on the national scene, and that is, are Republicans seeing sort of a glimmer of hope out there? We're looking at the president's job approval ratings this week. Drifting down, they're going at 58%. They're still high, but definitely coming down. Public concern about the stimulus package, about the economy continues, about his health care plan. Are Republicans feeling like this is the moment, or there's a little crack in the Obama armor here?
I was here 5 months ago or something like that. I said that the stimulus package would not work because you cannot – raise your hand if you're in the audience and you borrow the same amount of your income and you will be better off. That is what the nation's doing right now. The stimulus package will not work. Unemployment's going to go above 10%. I think it'll get to 11 next fall. The deficit will be in the $2 trillion range. And if Republicans have a coherent answer as to why they can do better, they are going to win in 18 months. They can take back the Congress. If they have a presidential candidate who is succinct, who can articulate that lower taxes create a more vibrant economy and more revenues and a better environment for us all, we certainly can take the Congress back. This is our moment. We don't have to worry. We don't have to run to the far right or run to the far left. We have to answer the questions facing people today.
Senator, I'm going to close with you, Joe.
Okay.
President Obama's approval ratings falling.
First of all, I don't want President Obama to fail. Because if he fails, my nation fails. My nation fails, my state fails. And if my state fails, my family fails. So I think it's important that, you know, we work together to move our nation forward. Yeah, he's there at the time. And, yeah, there's big deficits. Why? Well, he's borrowed a lot of money. He did stimulus. But we're at fault, too. We were there for 8 years. We did some spending and so forth. So that's why they kicked us out. So at the end of the day, I hope that we can come together and, come up with a candidate that we're going to field. At the end of the day, I think Barack, I see him as an elitist. I really do, who's never had his hands dirty. I said it at the convention. And I hope that as we move forward, Carla, our country comes out of this recession. I mean, everybody's worth 33% less. And, I don't know how long this is going to last.
And Joe, your thoughts?
Well, I think that to your question, however you repackage fiscal conservatism, that's probably it's certainly a winning argument in contrast to what the Democratic Party leadership is offering at the national level now. I would say, however, that much of this answer to your question turns on something beyond California, and it's who's really in charge of the Republican Party. What vision does the party have for itself? How inclusive does the party want to be? If they go back to the rhetoric of calling itself the party a big tent, does that mean a big tent mostly just for white people who make over a certain income level and not white males primarily? Or do you really mean in that environment one that is colorblind and welcome and welcoming of everyone so that you divorce yourself of the social issues that divide people against one another? I think if the party goes in that direction, it takes what works for the Democratic Party and makes the playing field more level. If it stays entrenched the way it is right now and has Rush Limbaugh on one side and somebody else on the other, and there's this fight for the soul of the party, then the party will not be as effective as they could be in the midterm elections, and they're not going to beat Barack Obama in 4 years.
Well, thank you all. I think we've reached the end of a fascinating discussion. I want to thank all of our panelists, California State Senator Abel Maldonado, Tom Del Beccaro, Vice Chair of the California Republican Party, and Joe Tooman, Professor of Political and Legal Communications at San Francisco State. Let's give them a hand. Thank you so much.